thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
There we go.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. It's 1:08, and you're listening to the John Williams Show all the way until 3 o'clock. It's just a little two-hour program we've got here for you. But remember, we do a show on Saturdays, too. There we go. We'll kind of dissect the budget that the president's office has proposed a little bit later in the program today. A writer from CNN.money will talk to us about what's in it, what's not in it, and the debate about paid family leave. We are, I didn't know this, but one of the few industrialized nations to not have sort of a federal paid family leave program. Too many topics like this. My instinct is, well, I didn't have it, so I don't think we need it. For instance, one of the things, as I understand it, we'll talk more about this later on, that's in this proposed budget, is that if you pay regularly your college loan for 15 years, imagine 16 years after you graduate, you're still paying off your college loan. But for some of you, that's not difficult to imagine. After 15 years, the loan is forgiven. As a person who's paid off three college loans, I'm thinking, or financed three college educations, I'm thinking, no, I don't think that's such a good idea. I had to pay for college, so you have to pay for college, too. That may be selfish or short-sighted on my part, but you understand the instinct to say, no, wait a minute, I didn't get that, so you shouldn't either, or I'm not eligible for that, so you shouldn't either. And I haven't actually thought much about paid child leave since my kids are a little older now, and it's not an issue for us. But maybe we should have something like that. But if we do so, then it comes at what expense? When you consider all of the things that the president's budget is proposing, we got money for this. And the reason I think we do, at least in the president's budget, is because his daughter is an advocate for it. I'll tell you what, if you want to get something from this White House, you need to find a way to persuade one of those kids, Jared or at least Ivanka or at least Jared, that this is a good idea, because then maybe you get some traction. More about that after 1:30. By the way, Steve, I asked you this just a moment ago, but I don't know if we mentioned this on the air. You have not climbed Mount Everest before, correct?
No, I have not. No, it's one of the things I haven't done.
Has Lou Manfredini done that?
I think he did. He put a clubhouse on top.
No, he did a show from the clubhouse last Saturday in Mount Everest. By the way, he had a huge crowd.
Right.
The place was going nuts.
And I think it was sponsored by Yeti Coolers.
10 people have died climbing Mount Everest this season.
Well, I won't be the 11th.
No kidding. Here's the thing I don't understand. If I told you, hey, let's do something that will be life-fulfilling and exciting, but our chances are not good that we'll survive doing it, would you do it? For every 10 people that successfully summit Mount Everest, one dies.
You're kidding. It's that high?
For every 10 people that not climb, but for every 10 people that get to the summit, which is why they're all doing it, every one of them has agreed that they will trade a one-tenth a chance of death for success on Mount Everest. And I don't understand that. When these people die, when they get frozen to death or run out of air or fall, I don't feel real bad for them. I don't lose any sleep for those people. If you're in front of a stadium in Manchester, England, and it blows up, I have more sympathy for you than I thought I could have. That makes no sense to me. I have nothing but pity and compassion for those people. You know what I'm talking about. But if you do it climbing Mount Everest or K2, you know what K2 is, right? It's another mountain over there, and it is only a few hundred feet shorter than Mount Everest. While it's not the tallest mountain in the world, K2 is regarded as the most difficult to summit. Only 300 people have reached the top of K2. 80 people have died trying to get there. So if your life is so boring and you have so much money and you have so much ego, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with having time, money, or ego. We all want or could use more of at least two of those things. But if you have so much of that, that Everest is something you have to do, and you're willing to widow your wife or make fatherless your children, if you're a female, change the gender, then that's up to you. I salute you, and the Nepalese government salutes you because they want the $11,000 fee for you just to set foot on the place. So I'm happy for y'all. But if something terrible happens to you, I don't get it. I don't get it. If I don't know how that conversation goes with your spouse, it's because some of these people do have families, and you say, honey.
Maybe it's the spouses who recommend it.
Really? Brenda goes, you know, John, you've been thinking about a ping pong table, but I got to tell you.
It'll be a story you can tell for the rest of your life.
You're not going to have your grandkids on your knees someday and say, oh, I remember when we played ping pong. But if you climb Mount Everest, dear, oh boy, now you've got a story. Now, that's a red flag. How do you run that by your spouse? You say, listen, I love you. And being a pediatrician here in Houston has really been great. But I've got to climb Mount Everest. And then she'll say, huh, it says here on CNN that if you get there, that's great. But 1 in 10 people who get there die. So what does that say about me? What does that say about the kids? How does that conversation go? And then you go, I know, but I'll be super careful, honey. Or you say, I know that there's a chance that you'll all be left without me in your lives. And I'll miss you too. But I've just got to do it. And maybe that's how it goes. And then the spouse and the kids go, well, that's dad. That's dad. But underlying that, I know I'm sounding super critical, maybe because I am. Underlying that is that that is more important than my time with you. And I don't get that.
I wonder if people who actually do that have to be so singular of mind. Is that the phrase?
Yeah, I think so.
So driven by it that they're not as bothered by family relationships as other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're so driven in one direction like that.
And maybe it's not just people, Steve, then, who climb mountains. Maybe it's, I can talk about people who run marathons. There's a little of that in there. Or maybe it's people who drive race cars or people. Well, I was talking to a colleague here at the station. He said he has a sibling who was an avid skydiver. She stopped when she had kids. And I'll bet you the survival rate. I didn't look this one up. Hey, Ella, look up death rate skydiving. I'll bet the death rate for skydiving is pretty. I'll bet that skydiving is safer than, bicycling or something. I don't know. Shark hunting. Skip shark hunting. Something. I'll bet that
I think that would be fishing.
Okay, well, also known as fishing. Yeah, but fishing for sharks nobody ever died trying to get a muskie. A walleye. A sunny. But I'll bet you that it is a very safe proposition. But still, something that has risk. And you say, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore because now I have family. Maybe you say this, because usually those people are either, young, strapping people who don't have extensive families, or people who are maybe in their 50s and their children are adults. They don't need them now. If dad dies, they'll be fine. So maybe it's easier for them to make that call. And you're right. Maybe they're not encumbered by the same sort of tie to their kids that I am mine. I mean, I just moved from Minneapolis back here because we wanted to be closer to our kids. It's only a 7-hour drive. We can see our kids whenever we kind of want, really. But no, we wanted to be closer to the kids. I moved here because I wanted to be with Steve Bertrand, too. But I mean, the kids were a big part of that equation. I can't imagine telling them, there's a 1 in 10 chance I'm going to pass away. But I'm still going to do it because it'll really make me feel. And then I don't even know the end of that sentence. Is it fulfilled? I guess. But do people who climb Mount Everest then, like maybe some people who run marathons, never do it again because they've finally been able to accomplish that? Is that how that is?
I stand behind following your passion and your dream, but I also think that once you have a family, that's the decision you've made. And if you have a wife or husband who's really supportive of you and really wants to give you what you want, then they're also making a huge sacrifice for their shared children.
Yeah, but I wouldn't ask that. I wouldn't ask that of my wife. Even if my wife was game, even if she said, okay, this is so important to you, I'm going to give it to you, I don't think I would ask that of my spouse.
Because it's selfish, right?
Yeah. And trust me, I'm selfish enough. I'm a broadcaster. I've run marathons. I get it. But I don't think I would do that because I don't think in broadcasting or running marathons, there's a pretty good chance I'm going to die. I'll be annoying for a while, but I don't think I'm going to kill myself doing this. And I think that's the difference. Look, some people quit smoking when they have kids. Some people quit. I'm just trying to think of the things where suddenly you acquire a certain obligation, say family, and now you've decided, I'm not going to do that anymore. Mountain climbing, skydiving, smoking, I don't know, driving fast cars, cheating on your wife. I'm trying to think of the things that people do that they don't do anymore because they have some other obligation.
Well, the good news is you can go skydiving, John, because only 21 fatalities out of 3.5 million occurred.
That's what I'm talking about. Really?
In 2015.
Do that again. How many people skydived last year, or 2015?
In 2015, 3.5 million jumps.
Yeah.
Only 21 deaths. And, I mean, not to make it sound small, not to make it sound
Well, it was bad for the 21, but for most folks, it's a very, very safe thing to do.
So that's 0.0061 per 1,000 jumps.
Per thousand. Okay. Now, compare that to some other stuff. I'll bet that is safer than showering. I'll bet you the death rate for showering is higher than it is for skydiving. It's 119. Just had to get that off my chest today.
Could I take that bet?
What's that?
I think showering's probably safer.
Oh, I'll bet it's not.
Really?
You think points? Really? 3.5 million showers, well, 21 deaths, yeah, because we got 300 million people probably taking 300 million showers a day, and 21 people won't die tomorrow showering, I don't think. Right?
No.
Right? Okay.
I'm going to say,
you know,
no.
What a stupid thing to say, Steve.
I take it back, John.
Your Honor, I want that stricken from the records.
I take back what you said.
Thank you, because I don't know that I get to, but if you would strike it from the record, I'd like my chances then.
Well, dog bites, for instance.
See, there you go. Dog bites.
death by dog bite?
There you go.
26 in 2000.
26 people. Yeah,
that's awful.
Okay, but I need to compare that to... I need to get some sort of per thousand equation that you just gave us. Skydiving and mountain climbing, two other things. How dangerous is it relative to those things? By the way, I also want to talk about this. The picture that is going around the world today... is the president, first family. It's Ivanka, it's Jared, it's Melania, it's President Donald Trump and the Pope all standing there.
The Fleetwood Mac picture?
You're making fun of the clothes now?
Well, someone just tweeted out that it looks like Fleetwood Mac today.
So I looked it up. Why are they all, it looks like they're in mourning clothes.
Okay, yeah. So I brought this question to you because, you know, I'm Catholic. You go to church. You don't wear black anymore. You don't cover your head anymore. So why is it that when people go to visit the Pope...
I think this one's on the Pope.
...that they requested? I mean, obviously,
yes.
There must be some protocol because they wouldn't... They don't do it of their own. They must be told to do it or something.
That's exactly what they're told to do. The modest ensembles. Here's the USA Today, 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 today. The First Lady and her stepdaughter looked like twins when they both donned black long-sleeved dresses that fell below the knees, and they wore veils to meet Pope Francis on Wednesday. The modest ensembles follow the Vatican's established dress code, according to the First Lady's communication director, Stephanie Grisham. Per Vatican protocol, women who have an audience with the Pope are required to wear long sleeves, formal black clothing, and a veil to cover the head. Former First Lady Michelle Obama wore a similar look when she and President Obama met Pope Benedict in 2009. Queen Elizabeth met Pope Francis in 2014, and she went with a lavender number.
She's running another church.
I know.
She's got a lot going on.
I think she's so cool. She goes, hey, Pope, why are you wearing white? I don't go for that. I mean, really, who's Trump's who here?
I think Francis needs to work on that because...
This, to me, is the sort of thing that if anybody could sort of relax, it would be him.
Bring in a gingham dress. You can wear gingham.
But the queen wore a lavender number and accessorized it with a coordinating hat. She had flowers and white gloves. She looked prim and proper, but she did not look like she was, you know, accommodating the papal protocol. She again sported color, this time a pastel sky blue, when she met with Pope Benedict XVI at the Palace of Holyrood House in Scotland in 2010. According to the website for the U.S. Embassy to the Holy See, shorts, short skirts, and sleeveless shirts are not permitted when attending a papal event in St. Petersburg Square or St. Peter's Basilica. You hear that, Northwestern women's volleyball team?
Wait, in St. Peter's Square?
Yeah.
Look, I brought groups into the Vatican. And
you weren't meeting. Well, let's see.
Saying events in St. Peter's Square.
I'm going to read this sentence again all by myself. According to the website for the U.S. Embassy to the Holy See, shorts, short skirts, and sleeveless shirts. And by the way, it can be baking there. Sleeveless shirts are not permitted when attending a papal event in St. Peter's Square or St. Peter's Basilica.
So papal event, but that could be when he's doing the general audience.
Right. I would imagine that would be a papal event. So if he's doing one of those massive masses or blessings, oh, Easter Sunday is always cooler. But
I think he has a weekly audience, yeah.
If he does a thing on a Sunday in August, that is hot there.
I don't think it applies there. I've seen crowd scenes where people are not dressed that
way. Well, they're the Americans, and frankly, they are out of code.
Leaders. They're leaders that know what that way.
Melania and Ivanka opted not to wear headscarves while visiting Saudi Arabia recently, a move that President Trump had previously criticized when former First Lady Michelle Obama wore a, went headscarfless.
That's really interesting.
Oh, it's not that.
No, it is interesting because it's the same thing. You know, are you going to conform to a style of dress for one religion or one culture and not the other?
Well, clearly, the First Ladies have not. Michelle Obama did not wear a headscarf when she was in Saudi Arabia.
Most of us are closer to Catholics than we are to the Saudi
I suppose
version,
it's that.
Right?
Sure.
So we think of that like, oh, my God, well, you're not going to make us dress that way for you.
Well, I think
and yet we do for the Pope.
Yep. So explain that to me then. And, of course, the Pope, Donald Trump, had previously tweeted about that. He said that there was, here's how he put it on his tweet in 2015. Many people are saying that it was wonderful that Mrs. Obama refused to wear a scarf in Saudi Arabia, but they were insulted. We have enough enemies. By the way, he spelled enough, E-N-U-F. But that's not what's really making news today. What's making news today is the picture of the president and his family standing with the Pope, and why that is making news. And just a note about that in a minute here on WGN. Here on WGN Radio, this is John Williams. Jeannie Sahadi is going to join us, a senior writer at CNNMoney.com about the president's budget plan. What's in it? What's not in it? What should be in it? Should we have paid family leave in America? Should the government actually pay you if you adopt or have a kid so that you can spend more time with the kid at home? Like maybe 6 weeks of pay, maybe 12 weeks of pay. How about that? So just back to the picture. There's the president with his wife, his daughter, his son-in-law, and the Pope. They're all wearing black as per protocol. The Pope is wearing his white robes and hat and cross in front of him. And all of them look like they just ate bad fish, except the president. He's got the biggest smile, and the Pope particularly looks like, oh, God, this is the worst moment of my life. And the meme, and there are many of them attached to this going around, the meme I saw is, the Pope is all of us. But, you know, that is so unfair because that's just...
Oh, it's a moment.
It's 1,000 pictures were taken, and you could find any one of a number of things. Chris Cillizza and CNN, the editor-at-large, who's been writing a lot about this trip, and the president, for that matter, it's his beat, put pictures of Donald Trump and the family with the Pope, and it's glorious, and it's lovely. It would be something they'd frame. And then he has this picture, too, and he said, how you see this president is which of these pictures you like.
The Pope's got the face like, I can't believe I ate the whole thing kind of face.
The Pope's expression is this, the last two Americans I've seen in this joint of mine here, and he probably wasn't thinking joint of mine, but you get the idea, are Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly. Are you kidding me? Like, who's in charge of scheduling here?
Now, there's another picture. I just sent you a link to it that's out today. Okay. Of because, you know, so much, and it's the same thing, you know, coincidentally or whatever, there have been a couple of instances where it looks like Donald Trump is reaching for Melania's hand.
Oh, there's a lot of hand slapping going on lately.
Do you think that's real?
I don't think she likes him a lick, and she will. And, you know, I was critical yesterday of the president not showing a little more affection in public to his wife or common courtesies. I think it's because she won't have it.
Okay. Well, okay. I don't know if I agree with you.
That's based on two photographs I saw in USA
One's
Today.
One's a video.
Okay,
where
fine.
She reaches
yes,
up.
I did see that too.
Okay, so there's a picture today of them inside the Sistine Chapel, and it's taken, I mean, from right behind them. It has to be almost a staff photographer or something, and they're looking at the Sistine Chapel. You're looking at their backsides, and behind them they're holding hands.
Well, that's lovely.
Well, it is, but given the headlines, It just seems like, okay, let's get a hand-holding shot.
So this is the equivalent of Hillary and Bill dancing on the beach in that ridiculous series of photos Monica Lewinsky scandal.
I don't really think, I'm not willing to say that I think Melania was thwarting him. That could be the same sort of momentary snapshot or something, but it looks like they're like answering with this picture.
So you think that... It looks like they're what with this picture?
They're sort of responding to it like, look, they do hold hands. Because it's clear, that just the way the angle of the picture and everything, it's
so
pretty funny.
Do you think they listen to my show?
They maybe do, yeah.
The podcast, not live.
They'd be sleeping.
Yeah. Teresa just wanted to jump in here and say something about this whole papal thing, I think. Hey, Teresa, it's John, and you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Let me tell you about going to the Vatican.
Yeah.
Joe and I saw was in and I was in shock when the man said
I know what you wanted to say. You were able to say it to Elif, our producer, but now you're not coming through, Therese. Thanks for the call. She said the male versus female dress code at the Vatican is a double standard. The guys don't have to wear dark clothes. They don't have to wear veils. There's nothing like that for the men. There certainly is for the women. Yeah, I think if you were looking for double standards like that, you could find some at the Vatican. If I had to go looking... Frankly, every place the president has been on this trip, except for Western Europe, I would say, yeah, you could find some there.
Thank you, Steve.
1:43, this is WGN Radio. I'm John Williams, fabled triangulator. On a phone line, Jean Sahadi writes about money for CNNMoney.com. She's a senior writer there. She has a very interesting piece entitled Trump's First Budget, Trillions in Cuts. She wrote, it calls on Congress to spend $4.1 trillion next year, which is a little more than what is being spent this year, but it would greatly reallocate where the federal funds go. I think that's an interesting way to start your story because we're hearing cuts, 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 but we'll actually be spending a little more than even the previous budget. Is that right, Jean? I got the wrong button up. Is that right, Jean?
Oh.
Hi, there you are, Jean. Go ahead.
Hi. The spending $4.1 trillion, it's not atypical to spend a little bit more than the year before because of cost of living.
Right.
And things like that. So it's not really a huge jump at all. But yes, the Trump budget would, in fact, call to reallocate funds not only next year in 2018, but over the next decade. Some of the things that he would like to spend more money on is defense and border security. He would like to invest some money in infrastructure spending, not as much as he said on the campaign trail, just about $200 billion, but he wants to use that to entice the private sector to join public-private partnerships with governments to rebuild bridges and roads and things like that.
Sure.
He also, one of the real bright spots in the budget is his calling for a paid parental leave plan. It would be the first sort of national parental leave program ever. He wants to administer it through the unemployment benefits program, and it would be for both mothers and fathers, whether they had a child on their own or they adopted. That's an expansion of his campaign promise, which was a paid leave program just for working mothers who don't get maternity leave from their employers. That's about all the details we have on that plan. So lots and lots of details to be worked over if, in fact, Congress wants to adopt it. I know some economists don't think it's a good idea to go through the unemployment system, but broadly, it's a wonderful thing that the issue is being discussed because so many new parents are struggling to take time with their newborn and yet not lose their job.
Yeah, no kidding.
They don't have enough money to do it on their own.
Well, currently, you are afforded up to 12 weeks of leave from your job, but most people can't afford that.
That's right, because it's unpaid. That's the FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, only allows for 12 weeks unpaid for having a child or taking care of an ill family member or yourself and have your job guaranteed. And that's helpful, but most people can't afford to take 2 weeks, let alone 12 weeks, without a paycheck.
Yeah, right. So
to have 6 weeks of at least partial pay would be helpful.
So at least 6 weeks of partial pay. And I know you just said that we don't have the details on this, but I wonder how typically, we're the only country in the industrialized West that doesn't have something like this. I wonder how that would be executed. Does your employer pay you, or does the government? And do you actually get a check, or do you only get the money back as a smaller tax bill at the end of the year?
Oh, I don't think it would be through the tax system. It would be through the unemployment system. So if I got laid off and I was entitled to unemployment benefits, you know, I believe my employer pays in some amount of money for all its workers into the unemployment system. And so if they lay me off, I get money from that system.
Right.
So likewise, if I was going to have a baby and wanted to take 6 weeks off, I would get a check from the unemployment system. And this is, I'm guessing now, really, there are truly no details. So I don't want to say something that isn't
sure.
True.
No, but you're helping already. But I mean,
the tax system. Yeah.
Well, all right. But then I wonder this. And again, I know you don't know the answer to this question, but bear with me. Would there be an income cap on that? Would there be a limit?
That would probably be a smart thing. I think there might. Well, right, exactly, because you don't want to have a millionaire take 6 weeks and get paid by the government. It's not necessary. Also, a lot of employers offer paid leave to their workers, so this would benefit those people who work for companies that don't offer it. I don't know if that would be restricted only to people without paid parental leave.
Yeah, that's another interesting point.
Employer.
Right. What if their employer is already doing it? Although, if I was an employer and the federal government was going to pick up the tab, I might scale back my paid leave for new families that way. Only the
except
number.
Except that, yeah, but not if your competitors are offering. If one company offers me 12 weeks fully paid maternity leave, I'm not going to go to the guy who says, we'll give you 6 weeks partially paid through the government. Like, I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to go with the employer who has the more generous benefit. I mean, that's the whole thing with employer benefits. They use it to compete with their with other companies in their industry to attract workers. So I don't know that would be – I mean, that's what they said about Obamacare. Everyone would throw their workers onto Obamacare, but they didn't. A lot of people still have workplace-based insurance.
So there's a lot of discussion about the allocation of the money, and there's a discussion about, in fact – would this budget work? Because it calls on such rosy projections of economic growth, and there's sort of this magic $2 trillion floating out there that they seem to be using twice. Once,
yes, right. Through the tax cuts, both creating growth and yet paying for themselves at the same time. Yes, and also in the Medicaid, we're not quite sure if they're double counting some of the cuts that are being made. So that's a question mark we have yet to answer. But pretty much the budget has been roundly criticized from the left and the right for being too optimistic on economic growth. And optimistic is a kind word. I mean, delusional is really what some people think of it as. Just today, just a few hours ago, a deficit hawk, Mark Sanford of South Carolina, took White House Budget Director Mick Mulvaney to task for this 3% sustained growth rate. And that's important because he is really from Mick Mulvaney's camp. Mick Mulvaney is a deficit hawk. He was with the Tea Party, then the Freedom Caucus. Mark Sanford is very much of that same ilk, and he was having none of it with a 3% growth. So, yes, that's not going to fly.
I think did Mulvaney go to the Sean Spicer School of How to Win Friends and Influence People? Somebody needs to counsel White House spokespeople on demeanor, on how do you win over an audience from a podium. I don't think it's easy, particularly working for this president. I mean, seriously, how do you do it? But I think being, what's the word now, John? Whatever he was doing from behind that podium yesterday was not working. It was not coming across as a very good sales job.
That's right. The whole administration really could do with a bit more graciousness in how they present their proposals.
And, well, especially when you're asking for us to put money into walls and tanks and take 29% out of the SNAP program. There was an interesting line from his presentation yesterday. Gene, comment on this. He said there will be money for everybody who needs it in this budget. The problem is we're giving too much money to people who don't need it. Now, I think that's true. But it's hard, but that's tough medicine to take sometimes.
Well, I think his broad point is true. I mean, nobody who pays taxes in this country really wants those tax dollars to go to somebody who's scamming the system. Understood. You know, but you have human beings involved here. So wherever there's a federal program and there are human beings, there's going to be some fraud, waste, and abuse. There always is, and we already have anti-abuse programs in place. So we could work to improve those programs. But the concern with the way they've presented this budget is they're going to somehow magically assess who's deserving and who's not in a way that is perhaps a bit more stringent than is the case today. And I should say that, you know, even liberals who look at the Social Security Disability Program might say, yes, we need to reform that program so that the eligibility requirements and the the oversight into who can work and who can't. You know, that could be improved. So the broad point is well taken. It's just the specifics and the magnitude that the Trump budget is calling for is it's a little bit tough. It feels a bit heartless. And you know, Mick Mulvaney has asked repeatedly, well, how can you be so heartless? And he always comes back and say, well, when it comes to compassion, we're not going to measure it in the number of people who are in the programs, but the number of people we get off the programs. Again, a well-taken point. But if the idea is, hey, guy, you got to work. We don't want to give you any more money for food stamps or whatever. That's okay, but they're also cutting work training programs, and they're not painting a very clear picture of where these jobs are going to come from, because there may be very many able-bodied people who simply can't find a job that's suitable for them. So that's a broader economic problem. So it's just it's a tough budget. Well, let's just leave it at that. It's a tough budget. And Democrats are having none of it in the hearings today, and I imagine tomorrow as well.
We'll catch up then again on that. I sure appreciate your time this afternoon. I know you've got to get back to it. Jean, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Jean Tahadi is a senior writer at CNNMoney.com.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Here we go.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. It's nice to have you along for our little ride all the way until 2 o'clock. Ro and Anna in the WGN Downtown Studios. You'll hear them soon. Right now, though, in this hour, we talk about cereal. Breakfast cereal boxes honoring Chicago Cubs players. And what are my chances of getting one honoring Steve Bertrand? I want to have some little Stevies, or I don't know what they will be called. What would the cereal that would be honoring you be called? What would it be like?
Well, it'd be big something. It wouldn't be little.
It'd be something tall.
A tall,
lean kind of flake.
Right. Sticks. Cereal sticks.
2 points about your newscast. Number one, we have not yet heard about the CBO score on the health care bill.
No, I haven't.
I thought we were going to get that today.
Well, we are supposed to get it today. It's, what, 3:15 almost there? So
it's official. I'm now a complete wonk. I just said, ooh, where's the CBO score on the health care bill? Somebody shoot me now. Shoot me now.
So what's the over-under? There were 24 million uninsured or who'd eventually lose their insurance under the previous one.
I don't know. Well, this one, I don't know.
So you watch that, and you also watch they have to save, I think it's $200 million. The plans, it's got to be scored for $200 million in order to pass it with reconciliation, which means just 51 votes. So
we'll see how that all comes out.
If they save less than that, then it takes more votes, or it's subject to...
$200 million or $200 billion?
$200 zillion. It could be a gazillion.
$200 gazillion. Also, you did the story about the Naperville family whose son committed suicide.
Right. They filed a lawsuit today.
Stacey St. Clair wrote a page one story that was in Monday's Chicago Tribune about that. It was just remarkable. She was in our studio. A lot of you called in. And I said to her, let's come back to this conversation as the story evolves. The family was evidently going to sue the school. And your story just now was that they are going to sue the school. Right?
This I'm reading from a story that Stacey filed online, but that they filed a suit today.
Yeah. And I don't know what to make of that story. I guess I don't blame them. If they decided they didn't want to, I'd understand that, too. Families can grieve and go forward any way they want. In this case, they don't want somebody else's son or daughter interrogated the way they said theirs was. But if you know the story, their son was a 16-year-old. He had consensual sex, it's been described as, with another 16-year-old. He recorded it on his phone. There was no video images, but the audio. And when he played the audio to some friends, the girl found out, was mortified, and told the school. Now knowing that he has on his phone, quote-unquote, video of sex with an underage minor, he was called in and threatened with all sorts of things because he now possessed electronically child pornography. And his mother was eventually brought to the school, and the kid was really traumatized by the way it was handled, so much so that before his mom got there, he walked off the campus to a parking deck in Naperville, and from there took his own life. Just a tragic, tragic story. This month is Suicide Prevention Month. A recent sponsor of our station, I only know a little bit about this through my workings with them, is the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention. And at the end of our conversation with Stacey St. Clair the other day, we were saying, what is the takeaway from this awful story? And how do you even approach your kids with it? And she said, you know what I would do is I'd have them read the story. She said, I don't mean to be self-serving. She's not. But she said, have them read the story, then talk to them about it. Because this was a kid with no history of mental illness, no history of drug or alcohol abuse, no history of being dysfunctional or unhappy. He was picking out colleges. He evidently had a pretty good working and talking relationship with his parents. He'd previously discussed with them a consensual sexual encounter he'd had with another girl, or maybe the same girl, but he had already talked to his folks at the age of 16 about the fact that he had had sex. Many of us never had that conversation with our mom and dad, but then something happened at that school that day, and away he went. And if nothing, and Stacy's point is, you know, you don't know how kids process these burdens, and you need to talk to your kids about it. If nothing else, say, there is nothing that can happen to you that we as a family can't deal with together. Let's keep the lines of communication open, right? So the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention is running announcements on our radio station this week. And I'll just mention that if you or someone you know is having these sorts of feelings, you can go to their website, and that's afspil.org. It's the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention here in Illinois. And so the acronym is afspil.org. Go there for more information and details. Got a parking ticket the other day here in the great city of Chicago.
Did you deserve it?
I did not. And not only did I not deserve it, but I don't even think I was wrong, which are two different kind of questions in my world. So my buddy was pretty ticked because I went to visit him. He lives in the South Loop. And he knew where the parking spots were that I could or couldn't park in. He got the sticker, put the right date and all that information on it. The area that I was parking was zoned for this sort of sticker guest parking. And when I got back out, I had a ticket. And rather than address it immediately, I did what most of us did. I went raza fraza and then put it in the glove box in my car. That is what I think you're supposed to do. They don't want you to play them right away, or even deal with it. They want you to just pretend it didn't happen and hide it somewhere around you.
So the fee goes up.
Well, so that's the thing. So then I started thinking, you know, John, you're a responsible adult. You need to address that. So now I had to find the ticket because I forgot where I put it. But I eventually found the ticket. And then it was a bunch of mumbo jumbo on there, and I didn't exactly know what it was talking about. But I knew if I waited, I know me well enough to know this, that by the time I actually got my poop together and resolved what had happened and then actually pursued, some sort of recourse that I have as an aggrieved citizen, the ticket would now be $150 and I would lose and I'd be out probably eventually $7,000. So they said, you can pay online right now. You want to feel a 200-pound debit card? Pick up the credit card out of your wallet as you're going to pay a parking ticket you don't think you deserve. But you feel that the $75 is better than what it's going to cost you down the road. That's my measure of responsibility or proactivity.
So that's the equivalent of settling a lawsuit to make it go away.
That's exactly what I did, but for full value. Right. I mean, I gave him face value. I actually had to give him $1.50 because of a service handling charge.
Oh, that's beautiful.
What is Ticketmaster running tickets for the city now? Okay, here's my question. What percentage? I've got a lot of questions I don't know the answer to.
I got a parking ticket last week, too. I'll tell you mine after you go ahead.
Well, the end of my story is this. I wonder what percentage of tickets in the city are paid like that by people who believe they have done nothing wrong. And in my case, have done nothing wrong, Your Honor.
So the beauty of living in a leafy suburb is I got off the train earlier this week. Yeah, maybe it was last week. And I had a parking ticket. I pay by the parking app at the train station.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm like, that can't be. I paid, and I looked at my app, and I paid. I hit the numbers without having my glasses on.
Uh-oh.
So I paid for the wrong number.
Oh.
So I had reserved a spot that I didn't park in.
You paid for somebody else's spot.
I paid for someone else's parking that day.
What a nice thing.
I know. So, you know, I just took my ticket and marched right to the police station across the park and said, you know, this doesn't seem right. And they're like, yeah, you're right.
And it went away?
Story's over.
Oh, gee, my story's better than yours.
No, I showed them, you know, that I paid on my phone. I said, look, I did pay, but I put the wrong number down. They said, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, thank you for coming by.
If across the street from where I got this ticket, there was a police station with a woman standing there with a sign on her head that said, hey, John, tell me what your problem is, I would have walked across the street.
Yeah, do you think in Chicago they would have and said, yeah, that makes sense. We'll take care of it.
I did the thing you do. I go, okay, so how am I going to do this? I got to find the office on the 7th floor of the Thompson building, and it'll be in the Daily Center, but I'll go to the Thompson building first or something like. I'll go to the wrong building, and then I'll eventually find it, and there'll be a line, and then I'll get up there, and I will not have a Form 7932, and I will have wasted 6 hours.
You have to take a passport photo.
I know, and in the meantime, I've had to take 4 vacation days.
Right.
You know, I'm living in a tent down by the river now. I didn't want to do it.
Or you can pay $76.50.
I know. That's what it is. And I'm sorry. I don't honestly think this is the fact that, oh, John, you can afford to write off $75, maybe a little more easily than somebody else. But it really wasn't that. But I just thought, wow, I'm going to, because time is worth money, and I'm not going to spend a day on this when I can get rid of this for $75. But that feels like you're being robbed for $75. What percentage of people pay tickets in this city who believe that they do not owe the tickets? I'm going to guess it's 54%, final answer. No, 47%. 32%, but still, I bet it's a lot.
Well, first of all, no one thinks they deserve a parking ticket, even if they do.
If you had said, John, did you not put the sticker up and they got you before you got the sticker on? I mean,
right.
I can imagine a number of scenarios I would have fessed up. I mean, but really, that's it. Why did we even waste a perfectly good parking sticker if they're going to give us a ticket for that we don't deserve?
They should pay you because they put you out with their mistake. I'm only half kidding.
No.
Right?
But
you did everything right, and they made a mistake, and it's costing you.
Exactly. So the best case scenario is you've lost maybe, you know, 1/4 of day of work or 2 hours on the job or whatever your time-money equation is. You've at least lost that. Right. So say I figure that in real time money I lost $25 to get out of 75. Okay, well, that's what it cost me then, $25. But, I mean, still, that's not good. That's still not good. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines here. Dawn, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John. I wanted to make a comment about the young man who committed suicide.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, I retired from teaching high school last year, and one of the things that I saw so much of were kids who are so tightly wound because the stakes these days are so high for everything. And we look at them and they look completely normal and they're happy. They seem to be, you know, they're happy and they're smiling all the time. But it's almost as if they have to be happy all the time, because if they aren't, they are committing the act of being human. And by being human, it's a weakness. And I think they're so tightly wound to not be human, but to be extra anything, everything, that it really, we looking at them are not aware of how internally this.
And how would we know? And how would we know? Because they're playing the game. Do you think social media exacerbates that, by the way, Dawn?
I do. Oh, tremendously. Because you look at something, it's a picture of this or that, and it, as people say, it's not necessarily an authentic moment. It is a moment created for that social media site, and instead of that one picture, they've maybe taken 5 pictures, and they say, oh, that didn't look good, that didn't look, oh, this one looks so good.
Yeah.
And so it's... I can't remember the word they use it in art museums. But they have constructed. We've all constructed these lives that look really pretty in pictures, and we really have no idea what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. So then the kid thinks everybody's just having the time, and it's easy for them. And I'm got this facade going on, but I'm not happy. I'm tightly wound, like you say. Yeah.
Right. And they have to keep the facade going, because otherwise someone will find out that they're authentic. And, oh, my God, what if they are truly authentic and they're not happy all the time?
I'm 100% kidding. But wouldn't it be interesting if there was a website dedicated to social media that, and I think Snapchat was originally supposed to be something like this, but was more dedicated to the mundane or the disappointments, the, you know, it doesn't have to be a downer, but this sort of humanness, the ordinariness of us all. And,
oh, true.
And you'd go there and go, wow, my life isn't so bad after all. Dawn, I appreciate your call. Very interesting point. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, have a good day. It's 2:21. All right, my parking crisis with some other callers who've been through a similar scenario. Tell me if you've been to the movie that I described a moment ago and how that played out for you. What did you do? I'm just curious, really. I think we all could benefit from this. 312-981-7200. I know the kids are jumping up and down at your house. They're going, Mommy, when is this CBOE report going to come out? When's the CBOE report? When are they going to score the new health care bill? Here's your answer. When are we finding out?
After 3 o'clock our
time.
Hey,
kids, so. 3 o'clock, after 3. Now just sit still. Here, have a candy bar.
You got time for a nap, maybe a couple of Oreos?
Oh, boy, I'll bet it's going to be over 24 mil uninsured. All right, we'll report back to you on that after 3. I've been explaining to you my frustration with getting a ticket that I didn't deserve. Rakesh, same thing happened to you. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, King John, exactly your story happened to me.
Really?
I put in a guest speaker sticker, going to visit my daughter. When I come back, there's a City of Chicago parking ticket there. And clearly visible in full view below that, with the date and time, is the green sticker,
yeah.
The guest parking sticker.
Hello.
Yeah. And I said, hello, what's happening here? So I took a picture of that from outside, from three different angles, showing that, yes, yeah. I mean, this ticket is the thing, and I appealed it. So when I appealed it, they month and a half later, I receive a letter in the mail saying your appeal was denied because a judge saw the pictures and said the sticker isn't clearly available. I look at the pictures again. I said, what's going on here? I have a clear view. There is no doubt about it. Then it gave me the option that I can go ahead and appeal in person in a court, but I'll have to pay court fees, and I'll have to appear on a certain date with all the evidence. I said, you know what? Just do it. I'm going to pay the $75.
Yeah, that's it. That's the fourth ring of hell, nobody wants to do that.
Know very well that they're putting their hands in your pocket and taking those $75.
Yeah, yeah.
Evidence, John. When you become king, can you take care of this one?
It's even better when I become king, Rakesh. You will be in charge of this. You can just sit there.
No.
You're a bright guy, Rakesh. I'm gonna have you figure. Well, how? Because here's the deal. What if the picture you took in the digital transfer didn't come out so clearly on their side? Why not give the citizen the benefit of the doubt? Anybody that's going to this great effort probably has a reason that they're going to this much effort. Wipe the ticket away. Come on.
How about this? I'll send you the pictures. You be the judge.
Oh, my God. Do that, Rakesh. No, seriously. I want you to send. Hold on a second. Talk to Elif and tell me about how we can get the pictures, because I will be the judge. And jury. Jim, you're on the air. Hi, you're on WGN.
How you doing? I think you're right in pain, because you got to wonder, too, is how many of these wrong tickets are given out? I received a notice in the mail. I drive her over, and it said that I was parked in an illegal spot up at O'Hare, and it gave a totally different description of the vehicle with the license plate and everything. So I called the number on the back, and I was told, don't worry, we'll take care of it. They took care of it. I got a notice in the mail saying that I was fined $1,000 because I didn't show up for the hearing. So I finally went back to the hearing, had to reschedule another one. It basically ended up costing me $60 in parking fees just to go in there and have them say, oh, yeah, you're right, it's not you.
Right, so $60 in parking fees in garages and spaces downtown to fight a $75 ticket.
Right. So I think you're better off paying it that way.
Wow. Thanks for the phone call. Have a good day. Yeah, my buddy was pretty, he's pretty ticked because he really felt we were in the right. And he wants me to fight it. I'm like, no, I want you to fight it. Fighting it is worse than paying it. The other thing you do kind of want to just ask the person that was writing the ticket, because maybe a judge couldn't read it or there's not enough evidence. I don't know. The hearing process to me is a tricky thing, right? How do they really judge the guilt or innocence of somebody? But the person that's writing the ticket, come on. I don't think this is that difficult a job. Assuming I'm right and they're wrong, how could they get it that wrong?
They had five more to write before they had a break.
I know. Or do you think there's that? Do you think they have
a
quota?
I hope not.
I do too, because I hope it's not a revenue generator like the city might say it is.
Well, but
what is it? But the ticket writer doesn't get a commission.
I was going to say, it's not this grand scheme. The ticket writer doesn't care about the city's revenues or coffers. You know, it's not like they're all working together.
Yeah, right.
She just wanted to go to lunch.
Yeah, but maybe she did. But here's what she could have done. She could have gone to lunch without writing my ticket. And unless she has a quota she's got to hit, she has no motive to write an extra one that day. It's 2:30. Steve's got more news, more of your phone calls. And I don't know if you've got your collector box of Grandpa Rossi Crunch. We're thinking about him a little bit today since he didn't win on Dancing with the Stars last night. Frankly, David Ross, if you're listening, you know we love you in Chicago. But even you know you were not the runner-up in Dancing with the Stars last night, but you were. For crying out loud. The City of Chicago Police wrote me a welcome to the city note the other day. They put it under my windshield wiper blade, and I thought that was really nice of them. It was in a pretty bright color, too. And when I got to it, I realized this wasn't a welcome to the city thing. It was a parking ticket, and I was not illegally parked. I asked you, how often does it happen that people get tickets when they weren't parking illegally? Okay, I'll go first. One, and now we've been talking about the phenomenon of what you do about it since. Last couple calls before we go to our guest who's going to tell you about the new cereal. Frank, you're on WGN. This is John. What's up?
John, if you are made king, I make a motion to do away with all court fees in the event you are found not at fault. I don't understand how the city can still get their money if you haven't done anything wrong. If you're innocent and you prove yourself innocent, why are they still charging you a court fee?
I think that's we've been being a little silly here. That's brilliant. And by the way, they should also give you a voucher for parking, because if you've done nothing wrong, the city has no business costing you money.
In addition to that, I also make a motion to all these millennials. I'm an individual from the 60s who still enjoys paying cash. I hate when people give you paper money and then try to balance the coins on top of the paper. So isn't it much easier just to give someone change in return, the change first in coin, and then hand them the dollars?
A woman called in with this very same complaint to Speak Your Peace about 10 years ago. Kathy and Judy took the call. David, thanks for the call. I'll never forget. It wasn't that memorable, but it was kind of funny. That was Frank, I think. This is David. Hey, David, it's John, and you're on the air. Hi.
I lived in the Wrigley Field area for about 10 years, and I've had about $3,000 of parking tickets. But the worst one was they were putting in new fire hydrants on my block, and they had actually dug a hole and thrown a non-working fire hydrant in it, and I inadvertently parked in front of it, and I got a ticket for parking in front of a fire hydrant.
It's in a hole that's not ain't doing the fire department no good.
No, and I was livid. I got my camera. I got in the hole and was taking pictures of it that it wasn't even attached, and I did appeal it. And amazingly, they did overturn that ticket. But that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life.
I had a buddy that did the same thing, but then he got a ticket for being in a hole with a fire hydrant. You're not supposed to do that. So you said that in your many years of living on the north side, you've probably picked up $3,000 worth of parking tickets?
Oh, more than that, probably. Oh. You know, I was booted so many times. I've had my license suspended. It's crazy. I was a terrible parker, though.
It's a really big bus. We got room for everybody on this show. I'm glad you're listening, David.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the phone call. Now we go to Dancing with the Stars.
For you, peanuts, get your peanuts.
David Ross, a couple nights ago, did this as his finale song, and he danced up a storm But to be honest with you, and you know this is true, the problem with Dancing with the Stars is it's not a dancing competition, it's a popularity competition. And he was the runner-up on this year's Dancing with the Stars. Bill and Wendy are starting a march to Washington, D.C. They were talking about this earlier today. Actually, I'm not sure where they were on it, but I heard a woman call in and complain. And I know this is the wrong city to say David Ross shouldn't have been the runner-up on Dancing with the Stars, but he shouldn't have been the runner-up on Dancing with the Stars because he's the one that, he was fine. He's a lovely guy. Who doesn't like David Ross? But in a dancing competition, Simone Biles got kicked off? Are you kidding me? You know what I have in front of me, though, is a box of Grandpa Rossi Crunch that you can get at Jewel Osco stores in the area. And the people that are making these Cubs-centric cereals, their president, Ty Ballou, is on a phone line. He's the owner of PLB Sports. Let me punch you up there. Hey, Ty, it's John Williams. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Hey, John, how are you? Hello, Chicago. Thank you for having me on.
You're in San Francisco, right?
I wish I was in San Francisco. Close. I'm in Pittsburgh. They're very similar. Wait a minute, they're not similar. No. I was in San Francisco earlier this year. I'm in beautiful western Pennsylvania watching our Pittsburgh Penguins hopefully going to a Stanley Cup after tomorrow night.
Yeah, good luck to y'all on that. You guys are skating against Ottawa, right?
Yes, yeah. They lost last night, game 7 here in town. So hopefully back-to-back for the Penguins.
So you guys are making this cereal, or how does it work? So I have in front of me Grandpa Rossi Crunch.
Right.
I have some Zorilla Crunch and the Rizzo's Honey Nut Toasted Oats Rizzo's.
Delicious.
How is it that you're not being sued every day by Cheerios and companies like that?
Well, it's not. It's, you know what, those are our own, the brands are the names that you put on there. So it's the Anthony Rizzo brand, it's Zorillo with Ben, and then, of course, Grandpa Rossi's, which are in Jewel Osco stores right now. So we make a great cereal that people buy over and over again, similar to those national brands you alluded to. But the brands are actually the athletes, and that's what that's what I started about 25 years ago. I was a fan of Wheaties growing up, actually out in Naperville many years ago, Naperville High School. And I've been out in Pittsburgh, as I said, for 25 years. And it all started, actually, Reggie Jackson, who we probably all know, went in the Hall of Fame in 1993. And at that time, I was running a candy company that actually owned the brand, if you will. And I brought that back. The first brand was launched in 78. I brought the Reggie Bar back in 93 when he went in the Hall of Fame.
I remember that. So there was a Reggie Bar when he was hitting home runs for the Yankees.
Right. And then there was a Reggie Bar. He was the only one in 93 to go in the Hall of Fame. So I brought it back. Reggie said, great. We tied in with Upper Deck Cards. And I thought, you know, maybe there's an idea for a company here. So I started PLB Sports. Kind of languished for a while. We did some players with the Cleveland Indians. We did a player actually played for the White Sox, Omar Vizquel. We did a salsa when he was with the Indians. We did Sandy Alomar. And the one that really put us on the map that got us going in cereal, I'm dating myself, it was 18 years ago, was Flutie Flakes with Doug Flutie. Launched it up in Buffalo. And the real quick backstory on that, we were going to try to sell around 50,000 boxes. Doug has a beautiful, wonderful son by his name who is autistic. So the goal was to try to raise $10,000 for autism to start Doug's charity.
Nice.
I couldn't sell a box. Doug actually made a sales call with me to one of the retailers up in Buffalo. The brand went in. Doug was on a Monday night game. ESPN put it nationally, and we ended up selling 2.5 million boxes of cereal nationally. The great thing, the back story on that, is that today the Flutie Foundation for Autism has raised over $20 million to help families and help find a cure. And that was all started on the side of a cereal box. So that's kind of how it all got started. I was waiting and waiting for years. The first product we did was last year with Jewel Osco, who's been an absolutely great partner. We were just trying to find the right product and the right team. And we partnered with Anthony Rizzo last year. We did a cereal box with him in Jewel.
How many of those? It was a limited edition, though, right? I'm about to ask you how many
you
sold.
We ended up selling around 150,000 boxes, which is awesome, which was great. And that did so well that Anthony wanted to do another box. We sat down with the Jewel executives and said, well, why don't we do a series here? And there's a lot of incredible. It was easy because the Cubs, and I'm a White Sox fan too, growing up in Naperville, but there were so many great Cubs players. We said, well, why don't we just do a limited series of three? Ben Zobrist, of course, the World Series MVP, and little did we know that David Ross could dance and come in second last night.
So you had two. You were going to do three, but I mean, you could have done one of those great pitchers. You could have done.
Right?
I mean, pick the player that on that team isn't a great story and worthy of a cereal box, but you go with David Ross.
We went with David Ross. You know what? It's just. I was in Pittsburgh and I was watching the celebration in Chicago, 3 million, 5 million, how many fans out there. And the thing that really touched me when I believe, how I get this right, Anthony Rizzo came on the stage and was talking about the World Series, whatever, and I think David was in the wings back there and talked about his relationship and how much that David Ross helped him.
Yep.
And we always say that for PLB Sports, if there's a story or a backstory, that's always better than necessarily the athlete, whether they be a football player like Rob Gronkowski that we have, or, you know, Anthony. We want Anthony to hit home runs all the time. But Anthony has this wonderful foundation, Ben Zobrist, and all the charitable stuff that he does. And, you know, it just David Ross seemed like the right guy to do. It takes nothing away from Chris Bryant or the other remarkable pitchers they have on the team. But there was something kind of magical about David Ross, and obviously we saw it here in the last 12
years. Well, my news guy here, Steve Bertrand, is a real tall, good-looking, kind of lanky, muscular guy. We want to do a promotional serial with him.
only a couple of those adjectives is right.
String beanies or something. I don't know what we would call them. But, I mean, but even if you said, okay, all right, well, we can do a serial for you. But then we got to be able to sell a lot of boxes. So we need Steve to
sell a lot of boxes. We need partners like Jewel, or we need to be able to sell them online. And the minimum we can run is 10,000 boxes. So if you have some brilliant ideas.
No, we don't. We're not selling 10,000.
The threshold is 10,000.
I've got 13 first cousins.
There we go.
So that's 13 boxes.
Good.
Yeah, no kidding. So you have the Rizzos, which can I still get the toasted oat Rizzos?
They're all in the stores right now.
They're all there?
They truly are limited edition, so I'm not sure how long. Anthony's product has been out for about 5 weeks. Ben's has been out for about a week and a half, and then David's is just coming out right now. We're going to be doing a press event. We were supposed to do it earlier, but he got a little sideways on Dancing with the Stars. So
yeah,
I'll be back in Chicago in early June, and we'll be introducing that. But all threes will be exclusively in Jewel food stores right now for, I don't know, a month and a half. And when they're gone, they're gone. And hopefully we'll do something new with Jewel.
Should I open my box or should I not?
Well, if you like cereal, you should open your box. I'll send you another one, too. They, you know, it's funny. There is values to this. If you go on to eBay, you'll see people trading these. That box today is probably worth $5 to $10.
The Rizzos?
I don't know. If you need the money, hold on to it. It's going to go up in value. If you like cereal, you know, open it one, try it, and then go to Jewel immediately.
And buy another one, yeah. Right.
For boxes.
All right. Well, maybe we'll catch up again next time you're in town, but it's nice to meet you, and kudos on the smart marketing idea. Ty, it's nice to meet you.
Well, thank you. So thank you, John.
Ty Ballou is the owner of PLB Sports. Look for String Beanies, the new toasted string bean cereal featuring Steve Bertrand at stores near you. Judy Pilak is in our studio. She's getting ready for Roe and Anna.
Yes.
Well, you're their first guest.
I believe I am.
Normally they have some, you know, really famous, important person talking about something really famous.
No, that's who they have today.
Oh, okay. All right. And what are you going to talk to them about?
I'm not really sure. What do you think it might be?
Well, they're probably going to talk about the Walk of Fame.
I believe they are.
And the induction ceremony tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And you are being
finally, it's here.
Inducted into
I think
the Hall
everyone's
of Fame.
Tired of talking about it.
About what?
About Walk of Fame and me being on it.
You know what I hear from people a lot? Hold on, I'm putting my collector box of cereals away. I don't want anybody messing with my collector box of Rizzo cereal.
Those are cool.
Aren't they kind of
cool? I might steal one.
The thing is, I'm like,
where did you get those?
The guy sent them to me because I was talking about them. Funny how that worked out.
Yeah.
But I mean, what if this cereal is crap? What if, you know,
you're not going to eat it.
I think I should.
I guess you couldn't just save the box.
Well, what are you going to do with a box of cereal anyway, really? You're going to leave it around your house and then it's going to be in a garage sale. Hey, you want a box of stale cereal? You want this?
Yes.
$5.
No, really. Sold. Sold. I'll pay $5 for that. My daughter would love that. She'll put it on a shelf.
Don't you think a breakfast cereal, though, Judy, should be something that is nutritious and delicious, that it's something that is, you know, a good for you thing with vitamin and niacin?
Yes.
But they're just cranking this stuff out for the box. That could be cat food in there. You don't know what's in there. I mean, it says toasted oats and things like
that. What's the crunch one here? It looks really sugary.
It says Zorilla Crunch.
Mm. God. Let me see it.
You're not even talking about the cereal.
Well, no. That looks pretty good.
That's the best.
It's
the
a very hefty box,
here's
too.
One that I think is funny is look at the... does that look a little like Steve Bertrand, the box of Grandpa Rossi's?
And no.
He's just hit the ball, and he's looking up at
it. Okay, that does. That's how Steve usually looks.
I know.
Right before a newscast.
I know. That's not a strong look. It's like,
where am I?
That's exactly what that face looks like. I'm not sure that they ran this through enough people before they put that on there. Congratulations in advance. I know you're going to talk
to
Ro
so
here
much.
In a couple of minutes.
You mean me or Grandpa Rossi?
Judy Pylak for being inducted
okay.
into the WGN Radio Hall of Fame.
Can't wait, really.
People stop me on the street all the time, and they go, this thing means nothing until Judy gets here.
You know what? The crowds tomorrow could be massive. That's all I'm saying.
I'll bet
That's
not.
All I'm saying.
I'll bet not.